Time for a little attitude check on the debate. And what about that $90 billion the president allegedly threw away on dubious green energy projects? We'll check that number out. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It's Thursday, October 4th, and I am Jeff Horwich. We'll also take a look at small businesses forced to take a stand in this election and another big election that could rock the hemisphere this weekend in Venezuela.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, last night's debate brought a number of what might seem at first blush like surprises, pivots on critical issues by Romney, the president leaving out seemingly obvious talking points. But how surprising are they really? Well, it seems to me this is the very definition of an attitude check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Attitude Check is our weekly partnership with the pollster Gallup and Gallup's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Seemed to me, Frank, that one component of Romney's perceived success last night, certainly part of what might have confused the president's strategy, was that Romney tacked to the center on some big issues, taxes, government regulation, are two big ones that come to mind. Does that surprise you based on your experience and your polling?
It's not surprising. And the third element where Romney tacked to the center was compromise. Remember, part of the Tea Party movement had been don't compromise, stick to principles. And yet Romney tried to extol the virtues of his compromising across the aisle when he was governor in Massachusetts. Clearly, once you win the primary, candidates realize that the voters that are up for grabs will be those that are independents, those who are undecided. So it makes sense for candidates both to come more towards the middle, with the proviso, of course, that candidates have to be careful not to alienate their bases.
And many pundits, both of the professional and the armchair/Twitter variety, have jumped on the fact that Obama made no mention of the 47%, these comments from Romney that almost half of Americans are dependent on the government. Did that surprise you?
Well, tactically speaking, that's a good question why it was not raised by the president last night. But, you know, it would be have been interesting to see how it played out, because our polling shows that Americans were actually in some ways sympathetic to the themes that Romney was making with the 47%. We just came back after he said it and asked Americans, are Americans too dependent on government? And we had almost two-thirds who said yes. Anytime you criticize big government in a broad sense, you are resonating with majority public opinion. So Romney actually had something he could have come back with had that issue come up.
And let's look ahead to the next debate, the vice presidential debate. What do Americans think of these two guys?
Well, they're both about equal. Ryan and Biden have favorable ratings, as we measured them, are in the, you know, the mid-40% range, with unfavorables almost as high. So neither of the guys are highly loved. Neither do either of them have very terrible images. I think a lot of Americans are going to wait and see what they learn more from the vice presidential candidate on the Republican side, because, of course, he's not been in the public eye much, whereas Biden is more of a known commodity. However, hard to say based on history that the Veep debate's going to make much difference in the overall outcome.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of Gallup. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Now, one memorable exchange last night came when President Obama called for an end to oil company subsidies. Mitt Romney then accused the president of spending $90 billion on dubious green energy projects. This morning, Marketplace's Eve Tro from our sustainability desk has a closer look at that number.
Here's what Romney said to Obama.
And in 1 year, you provided $90 billion in breaks to the green energy world.
That $90 billion number? That's right, sort of. It's the amount the White House made available to, quote, lay the foundation of the clean energy economy in the 2009 Recovery Act. That included a host of programs covering energy efficiency to nuclear cleanup to job training and, yes, some government investment.
Breaks is, I think, a pretty stretched definition of it.
Shale Khan studies clean energy for Green Tech Media. He says the $90 billion covers many years, not 1 year, and it hasn't all been spent. Some of the money is from programs approved by President Bush, though only activated under Obama. Romney also said that about half the companies that received government money for clean energy had gone bankrupt. Khan says, no way.
I was thinking about it this morning, and I can come up with less than 10 companies that have gone bankrupt since then.
Less than 10, he says, out of thousands of companies that took advantage of clean energy initiatives. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
All right, let's check in on Wall Street. Well, an up day on Wall Street so far. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500, first few hours of trading anyway, up about 0.5%. The NASDAQ index up about 0.1%. On unemployment today, yet more data best characterized as it could be worse. Unemployment claims last week increased just a bit. Economists had expected more layoffs on the logic that companies are getting nervous as we near the fiscal cliff, but evidently many are taking it in stride for now. And more signs of a cool down in U.S. manufacturing. Demand for U.S. factory goods fell in August to the lowest level in almost 4 years.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Presidential debates like last night's are designed to help voters decide whom to support. But if you run a small business that does political work, more often than not, you've got to pick sides too. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
Adam Davis co-owns DHM Research, a Portland, Oregon-based polling firm. He says at one time, the firm was the premier polling company for Democrats in the Pacific Northwest. The only problem? Not enough money was rolling in.
We wanted a more steady business. We said enough is enough. And we made a commitment from that point on to be independent and nonpartisan.
To grow, DHM abandoned political polling altogether. Small business consultant Gene Mark says even firms that have nothing to do with the candidate's message need to be partisan.
The way that the trend is going is that you're going to choose a political party and say, we're going to cater our product and services to you, and that's going to be our market.
But the dividing line disappears at some point. Alicia Preston works as a senior advisor to political campaigns.
Money is the mother's milk of politics. We don't spend it irresponsibly.
Preston says when it comes to hiring a sound company or caterers for an election night party, a campaign just wants the most bang for the buck. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And now the view from swing country. We're going to take you to Ohio. This week, my Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson is checking out the scene in that battleground state. And he spent last night watching the presidential debate with a group of voters from across Ohio. Here's the lineup. John Witkowski is an accountant and leans to the left. Kelly Beloff works in healthcare. She leans to the right. And then, believe it or not, we found a couple of them, two undecided voters, elementary school teacher Dan Schneider and Linda Lee, who is retired. Now, they talked about a lot of issues that came up in the debate, including the government's regulation of Wall Street. Here's Linda Lee.
I think there should be regulations. I believe that they're playing fast and loose, and everybody was making a lot of money on the stock market or, you know, the banks, and the housing market was just out of control. They were loaning money to people, absolutely could, had no way of ever repaying that. Yes, there needs to be regulation, and I'm not against that.
John Witkowski, what about you on the issue of Wall Street banks and regulation?
I think they're needs to be a balance between regulation and keeping the markets as free as possible. Because, you know, on either extreme, you know, on the one extreme where you have a completely free market, people act in their own best interest, and that's not necessarily best for the society as a whole. Whereas on the other hand, you regulate the economy to the point where you kind of, you know, strangle it, so to speak. It kind of suffocates, and then you have a shrinking economy. So I kind of agreed with Mitt Romney when he explicitly said that, you know, there needs to be some regulation, but not all regulation is necessarily good.
Dan Schneider, was that an issue that mattered to you?
It is an issue that matters to me, but I think that you can have a situation where you have free markets and few regulations, but then there should be consequences. People should know that if they make bad investments and they make bad bets and they lose, then there's a penalty for that. Right now, we've got some regulations keeping things in check, I think, but Mitt Romney wants to go back to a situation where, you know, an investment bank can gamble your savings. And then there's no consequences. The taxpayers will bail them out when they lose the taxpayers' money. And look where it got us.
Kelly Beloff, was that an issue that mattered to you? Did you focus on that part of the debate?
It does matter to me somewhat, being in small business. And I was managing a doctor's office at the time. And the banks stopped working with us. And it was, to me, a problem. I didn't like the TARP. I didn't want the money going to big banks. Our small bank was bought up. I think there could have been a better way, but we have what we have now. But I would like to see some regulations allowing small businesses to be able to borrow again.
We're so focused on our own presidential election next month, of course, but Venezuela has one on Sunday. And unlike any election in recent memory there, it's looking close. Hugo Chavez has been in power since 1998, and since then he's steered Venezuela toward what he calls a socialism for the 21st century. He has kicked out foreign firms, he's nationalized the oil industry in a country with the biggest oil reserves in the world. If he loses, it's a pretty big deal. Cristina Soriano is a professor of Latin American history at Villanova University. Good to talk with you.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
I'm fine, thank you. Tell me a little about this challenger, Enrique Capriles. And is he different in critical ways from Chavez?
Enrique Capriles is a lawyer with a long political resume. He's different from Chavez because he's offering legal stability for companies. He recognizes private and intellectual property and offer to discontinue government takeover on important sectors of the economy, such as food companies, agri-industries, services, or banks. But he's also very clear that the private sector should put a lot of effort on social responsibility.
If Capriles makes it easier, more tempting for foreign companies to come back to Venezuela, what could that mean for the economy there?
Well, it will go in more, of course, more employment, and he believes that it's going to increase the productive sector of Venezuela. He's offering less government intervention, but at the same time providing a control environment to increase investment, increase productivity, of course, continuing attending social programs that have been giving many benefits to popular sectors in Venezuela.
Even if Chavez wins again on Sunday, what might it mean that he had faced a serious challenge?
I think this is the most tightly election that Chavez has confronted in the last 15 years. So he has to keep in mind that probably like a large sector of the population is not really happy with Chavez's program, right? But at the same time, he's probably offering to have more state control over production. And on the other hand, of course, there's a lot of Chavez supporters that are afraid that Capriles could win because they believe that Capriles is just saying that he's going to continue the social programs, so they don't believe that he's going to continue the social programs. So they are afraid of losing many benefits that Chavez has brought to the people in Venezuela.
Latin American history professor Cristina Soriano at Villanova University. Thank you.
Thank you.
And as we wind down the podcast here in Boston, they have caught the Burl Stealer. Now, not Burl Ives. He is still resting peacefully, as I understand, in his grave in Illinois. Someone in Boston has been chainsawing off the knotted deformities from trees across the city's parks. Those are called burls. Who knew? Now you do. These are kind of a prize for wood carvers. You can make cool bowls and furniture out of them. But stealing burls in the dead of night from city parks, that's not cool. According to the Boston Globe, the burglar is charged with willful and malicious destruction of property. And finally, without the space shuttle, NASA had hoped to put one of its astronauts on an upcoming Russian Soyuz launch. Well, it turns out astronauts, just like the rest of us, can get bumped from a flight. In this case, a U.S. astronaut presumably headed to the space station to do, you know, science, has been bumped by the ethereal New Age singer Sarah Brightman. ABC News says she bid $51 million for that seat. That's it for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, coming to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.